This conference is being recorded.
This is Luke Allison with CriticalBench.com, and I'm here with Matt Wyszynski. Matt, how are you?
Fantastic. How are you doing today?
Doing good. Glad to run you down and, you know, find a little bit of time. Take a second and some of the listeners an idea about your background, what you do, and sort of what you do as an athlete.
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on and asking me some questions. Basically, my background, as a kid, you know, we're always running around, you know, climbing trees and jumping off of dumpsters and hoping God don't land on my head, stuff like that. So I got into wrestling and gymnastics when I was, you know, younger, and that taught me a very good base of how to use my body. And then proceeded with track and field and wrestling and stuck with football for about 17 years. Was an All-American running back in college, and after that I proceeded to play in Europe and for one of the NFL European affiliate leagues in Finland, and that was one heck of an experience playing over there. Some big, strong guys over there, but the skill level was pretty low. But those guys sure knew how to get strong, and they taught me a lesson over there, that's for sure.
So a little bit of everything, sort of a style that's maybe not as familiar as what most people would do, where they find one sport and they sort of stick to it until they burn out or get too injured to play anymore.
I'm sorry, my phone's kind of breaking up a little bit. I'm trying to hear everything you're saying. I apologize.
No problem. I was just mentioning that, you know, perhaps your background is a little bit different than some of the people listening, whereas you participated in quite a few different sports, whereas it seems really popular these days for people to lock in on one or two sports and play till they get injured or so burned out.
Yeah, I mean, I have quite a few friends that, you know, they just did one thing and they stuck with it. You know, you get pretty good playing baseball, for example, or even tennis. I mean, it could be anything. Football, obviously, there tends to be a risk factor for injury, as far as people believe, because of the hitting and, you know, the intensity factor. But I mean, you have just as much chance to get injured. You know, what causes tree? We've all heard these sort of things. But it's just always been my nature to do different things. Always learn a new skill. You know, I don't care if it was kayaking, playing tennis, and tennis and football don't really go hand in hand, but I like to get in there and do that. You know, that was how I got my cardio. You never saw me on an elliptical machine or something like that being stuck. I would much rather watch a chicken roast for 20 minutes than, you know, be bound to something like that, you know. And that's, you know, typical bodybuilding prescription, you know, sit on a, you know, a treadmill or bike and, you know, put the headphones on or read your book for 20 minutes while you just burn it out for a little while. I just found a way to just entertain myself and go for a hike or a mountain run or something like that when I was living in Pennsylvania, and just always trying to change things up and learning how to use my body as a youngster, you know, wrestling and gymnastics and stuff like that. It just, I was just never afraid to get out there and just do stuff and start flipping and moving around. So I still maintain that athletic base. You know, I'm in my 30s now. I just turned 32 this weekend. That doesn't exactly feel awesome, but, you know, you're only as young or as old as you feel, and I still feel great. I can still run up trees and do backflips and do these things that, you know, some kids can't do when they're you know, when they're teenagers. So as long as I can keep these things up one day at a time, you know, I'm feeling good. And that's one of the things that I preach to my younger athletes. Just learn as many things as possible. But you really want to get good at one thing at a time and not try and just learn everything at the same time. If things get sloppy, you might not really get that good at anything. After you play a sport, that is your priority, of course. But definitely get out there and keep learning and growing and getting more experience by learning new techniques and new adventures through various sports. I think it's going to help your overall background and your overall, you know, potential in the long run, you know, if you're developing from a, you know, junior high through high school and into college.
Certainly. Can't do that at all. One of the things I really noticed, I ran across your videos on YouTube, and I was basically amazed at the sort of diversity of, you know, the lifts you were doing, the implements you were doing, you know, the speed, and it didn't really remind me of what anyone else was doing. Is that something that you sort of take joy in being able to do so many different things and have, you know, different attributes going at all times, basically?
Absolutely. A couple of years ago, I came across CrossFit, and that intrigued me because it was similar to things that I was already doing. I didn't find too many other things that implemented, you know, raw strength and power and, you know, agility and things like that. And CrossFit preaches that. But I'm not, you know, a diehard CrossFit guy, like, where I think that there's no other way out there, because I know there is. And I'm always looking and searching and training for, you know, a better way. But at the same time, I'm certainly not going to get away from the basics. You know, I'm always preaching and teaching, you know, just basic squats. Get your back squat right. Dial it in. And do it the right way. Your deadlifts, your heavy pressing, and your pulling, those are the staples. So people see some of my YouTube videos, and they contact me, you know, how do you do this, man? They want to start, I don't know, like swinging, you know, the Bulgarian bags around and whatever, like all kinds of different stuff. And they can't really do a back squat the right way. And if you're not... You know, you got to walk before you run, and I tell people this stuff, and I don't know how many cliches there is to say the same thing, but do the basics first. Get your bones, your muscles, your connective tissue strong before you go, you know, being a knucklehead and idiot like myself, where it seems very potentially dangerous, but it's just kind of out there for show and to get some attention. And I guess it kind of worked. I mean, you called me, so... I mean, that was kind of the idea. But if people don't understand to stick with the basics first, then they're kind of missing the boat.
And that's one of the things that's not exactly apparent. Maybe that's, you know, sort of the age we live in with the internet and instant gratification and things like that, is, you know, people want to do the things that they like, you know, the few little things that they like, and they don't want to have to, you know, learn, you know, multi-joint really hard that they have to be corrected on, like the squat and things like that. You know, is that something where, you know, need to hear it, you know, from you if they contact you and say, you know, that's not really what you should be doing right now?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, if you're trying to do certain things that are out of your league, it's going to end up bad, you know. So take note of where you're at in your training. And, you know, if you've been training for a couple months, you need to train like a beginner. You're not going to advance if you're trying to train like an intermediate or an advanced level athlete. Now, I've had younger athletes that they want to train with their older brothers who might be, you know, 4 or 5 years older than them, and they've been training for that much longer. And so they're trying to do like these new techniques and things like that, and it just doesn't work. You've got to train like a beginner. You've got to go through first grade and second grade and work your way up before you start training, you know, on an advanced level. So it's... That's something that I gotta bring these younger kids, you know, that are coming to me, or even, you know, some people that call me. It's hard when you're, you know, talking on the phone or you know, messages on YouTube or Facebook or something like that, because I have no idea what these people's backgrounds are and what they're trying to accomplish sometimes, and what they know how to do. And if they say, well, yeah, I squat this, but do I know, is it a quarter squat? Is it a full depth squat? Like, I don't. So, you know, numbers get inflated and things like that, and they want to, you know, keep moving forward. But moving forward too fast isn't always going to be your best bet. It's make sure that you are on the level of where you're supposed to be, I guess.
One thing I've become sort of aware of recently is a movement towards training athletes, whether they're teammates or from different sports, but at similar levels, together in small groups and sort of through, you know, the same workout, basically. Is that something that you find, you know, useful or maybe not? Talk a little bit about that.
It's something that I do find useful. Like, it might not be ideal for everybody. I think what is ideal for me is I like to get people on a one-on-one basis for 1 to 3 sessions or so, depending on their skill level and their background. And I like to spend time with the individual privately to make sure that the basic things are intact, and I get the learning out of the way and drill it into their skull, deep into their brain, so when I can give them cues, they know exactly what I'm talking about. When, you know, as far as their back positioning, their foot positioning, I see them get down to the bottom of their squat, but their back's rounding out, their heels are coming up. If I do that immediately in a group environment, and they're all trying to go too far, too fast, and they're focused on each other as opposed to what they're doing themselves. So I like to get one or two sessions alone first. It's not always perfect, and it doesn't have to be that way. But then once I get beyond that, then I do really like the group setting because the intensity factor gets up. Everyone pretty much knows their cues. I can watch, you know, almost guard, you know, like several kids at a time. And you got a couple people resting, a couple people working, and the rotations, they flow smoothly. When it stays on a one-on-one basis, the intensity is lost. The work ethic, the motivation, I think there's going to be some benefits, some pros and cons on both sides of the fence. But if I have my way, you know, I would like to spend a little bit of private time with each individual first and for an hour or two, and then move them into a group with like-minded people. You know, that's one thing that's, you know, CrossFit preaches total scalability, you know, so you can have the soccer mom working out with the Navy SEAL, and it works fabulous for some people. It just doesn't, you know, I don't know if it's going to work ideally in my environment. We could make it work, but I prefer, like, I just had a group of high school kids, so all baseball players play on the same team, and that, to me, that's ideal, but you're not always going to have that. You can't always work in the ideal environment. You take the best with what you got. But to keep the cost a little lower, for one, I work in small groups. Keep the intensity factor higher, I work in small groups. The atmosphere stays pumped up. The kids really like it. And, you know, I think they get a killer workout with things that are benefiting them. And they all have the same goals, so they can work towards it. You know, if you have too many different demographics in the same training environment, you know, there's bound to be different goals. You know, so CrossFit is this ingenious thing where everyone's trying to attain everything at the same time. So it doesn't matter what the workout is; it's going to be ideal for everybody. But in reality, if you are an athlete, a specialized athlete, baseball, basketball, football, you don't need every single thing. Football doesn't need, you know, a 5K or a 10K run. I highly recommend against a 10K run for football players. But you need 5 to 10 seconds of the most explosive burst of power that you could have, and then rest for 30 to 45 seconds. And, you know, you're going to go hard for, you know, 10 sets of that, and you're going to back off for a couple of minutes and get a good solid rest and then come back at it again. And that type of training is hard to find in a larger scale group, larger demographic, where everyone is trying to maximize their cardiorespiratory endurance and their stamina as well as their power. You know, because a football lineman doesn't need the same kind of endurance that a triathlon, you know, athlete needs. So it's depending on what the athlete's needs are. If you're specialized in a sport, I like to get them into that. But, you know, I do have just some general fitness enthusiasts that come in. And, you know, CrossFit is something I like to use with them, but it's not something I like to use for my football players or, a few other athletes. Or, you know, you can use aspects of that fitness regime, but, you know, I would not use, the dot-com wads. As far as, and here I am talking about CrossFit. I am, you know, a CrossFit trainer, and I do like it. I highly recommend it, but I just don't think it's ideal for everybody all the time.
The line where it seems to sort of break down on whether CrossFit is good or bad is people seem really familiar with what they want to do, not only goals, but sort of developing the attributes that they would need for those goals. And so, like you were talking about, you have linemen, and maybe they don't need to be in CrossFit, but then the person that would benefit from CrossFit maybe doesn't, you know, want to spend the time learning and sort of working on, you know, mobility and stability and things like that. So you have, you know, this sort of educational curve. Do you have that where you have different sort of programming that you can offer, but you have people that aren't really even sure, you know, what they want really?
Well, there's when they come in, they're going to do some very basic moves, and you're going to have some athletes that are just incredibly athletic, and they're just insane. No matter what I say, dude, they can flip off walls if I tell them to. And then you got other guys that can barely touch their nose, you know, if they close their eyes, you know. And so their coordination factor is going to be a little bit different. So I have to keep their programming just extremely basic. And different guys, you know, they could benefit with Olympic lifting or different implements. You know, I got guys that just can't learn how to really swing a kettlebell right way. And maybe that's something like poor on my part, is not being able to teach them the right way. But some people, you know, you just got to find what cues work for the right person. There's not one way to teach everybody, but there's several ways to teach each individual person. So I make the assessment on the individual, and we slowly work from there. And we're going to build up to greater mobility and range of motion through their joints. I think that's good for anybody. But as far as strength and power development, if they can't do like an Olympic lift, you know, they're going to stay with like weighted box jumps and then pushing the sled real hard, because these movements are extremely simple, but not necessarily easy. Whereas some people could consider a snatch or a clean jerk extremely technical, but I don't think it has to be that technical either. But I guess that's all on a relational curve compared to other things. Like if you look at some gymnastics type movements, you know, a snatch seems relatively easy compared to like certain planches and you know, iron crosses and things like that, you know, as far as a difficulty scale. But I guess that is, I make the assessment with the individual, and if they are able to perform particular movements, I'm going to implement them, and I'm going to get these guys to learn as much as possible and gain as much effectiveness in their program as possible. But if they can't do certain things, they're just going to stick to some very basic moves and get really good at them, and slowly and surely start implementing new movement patterns and new routines into their program.
You spoke a little bit about specializing for sport or specializing for maybe your fitness level. Talk a little bit about sort of what it means to actually be prepared specifically for one sport, whether it's, you know, football or wrestling or gymnastics or whatever, and sort of can do certain things, but as a result of that, you're just not going to be able to do other things based on the way you're spending your time and, you know, the sort of quality that you're developing sort of muscularly and what you're teaching your body to do.
Okay. Well, one thing that I found, I see some people do is, like say for baseball players or a golfer, they'll put like a 30-pound golf club or some kind of implement and try and get people to swing a super heavy golf club to try and strengthen, you know, their torso or whatever, or even a basketball player trying to shoot a heavier basketball than, you know, the however many ounces the basketball weighs to try and strengthen those joints. But I think it's going to mess up the motor pattern and the movement, or even, you know, throw off their shot, because the implement isn't quite the same. So I don't, when I talk about specificity, I'm not trying to mimic any particular movement. So a baseball player or a wrestler or a football player, even a basketball player, can have a very, very similar program, but it's the differences are going to be keyed in the rest periods and duration of sets. So, you know, reps, sets, and rest period. And that has, you know, a huge impact on what their capacity is. A couple heavy sets of deads versus, you know, a little bit lighter for a couple extra reps. And that makes all the difference between, you know, especially with kettlebell work, you know, just changing it up a little bit. You go 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off. And depending on if you're a grappler or a lineman, you can still do swings, but just changing up the weight and the tempo, the reps and set schemes is that's what I talk about is specificity. You don't have to change the actual exercise. As long as it's functional movement, multi-joint compound movements, it's going to benefit. You're moving your hips. You're working in an explosive fashion. You're going to be able to kick harder if you're, you know, a kickboxer. You're going to be able to attack faster if you're a grappler. You're going to be able to get out of the hole if you're a lineman and explode right through the tackle or the running back, the basketball player is going to be able to jump higher. So these things, the movements stay pretty similar, but it's the implementation as far as reps and sets and rest periods is my biggest differentiation for different athletes, different sports.
As you begin to sort of move those different parts around, which I guess is basically what programming breaks down to, what sort of influences do you draw on? Where do you go if you have questions? Sort of things like that. What really interests you when you put all these pieces together?
Like where do I go as far
yeah,
as
yeah? I mean, do you be like pure? Do you do articles? Do you watch DVDs? Do you go to seminars?
Sure.
Sort of where do
sure.
you?
Okay. Whenever I have a seminar or some clinic that I can go to in my area or wherever, you know, I can manage to get to, I love doing that. Hands-on experience. As a matter of fact, this weekend coming up, September 6th, I'm going to see Chris Wilkes at a Olympic lifting clinic out in Chesapeake, Virginia, where I don't think it's at his particular gym, but it's in his area. Olympic lifting are things that I like to implement, and you know I saw him last year, and that day my PR snatch and clean and jerk went up approximately 10 to 12% by seeing someone who's better than I am, you know, a specialist at what he does. So you know, and I spend some time really focusing on like one or two major goals at a time. Get your seminars. You know, when I took my USA weightlifting sports performance coach, you know, I went out to Ohio to do that. You've got to take the time to get out. If it's important to you, you make the drive. You take the flight. You invest the money because it's going to come back to you tenfold, a hundredfold over and over again if it's something that you're planning on, you know, investing a lifetime in or, you know, even a season in, whatever, a couple $100, take a trip and make sure you're going through reputable sources. You know, just I can't tell you how many, I think almost quack, like CPT, certified personal trainer, you know, courses there are. There's certifications everywhere. Some people are just good, some people aren't. And you know, you have the gold standards, like your National Strength and Conditioning Association, if you want to, you know, become a certified trainer, a certified sports conditioning specialist, strength conditioning specialist. So they're great. Yes, you have to read the books. As far as nutrition goes, I mean, it's hard to say. You're looking at millions of books out there, and every one of them has a different fountain of knowledge that they're pulling from. You got your high carb diet, your low fat diet, your high protein. They're all over the place, and there's so little road, you know, to really know where to follow. But you do the background, and you got to find what works best for you. So there's time under the bar is going to be the most important thing. I don't care how many books you've read. If you're not spending your time doing the do, getting sweaty, you know, in the gym, you're not going to learn anything, you know. I don't know how many pilots became a pilot just by reading the books. They got to fly the damn plane. So you get under the bar, and you start lifting it, and you're going to learn, okay, I relax my back. I breathe, you know, I exhaled at the bottom of my squat. That didn't really work out so well. I can't get my PR up because, you know, I'm rounding out, and, you know, now I got, like, a pulled muscle in my back, whatever, because I did the wrong thing. You've got to learn, but obviously, a good coach is going to, you know, shorten that learning curve and tell you the right things to do. But, yeah, it's articles. You know, Zach Evanesh is a great guy. He's always been very passionate, helping me out along the way. Ross Training, that's a great site, great forum to go to. I mean, CrossFit, Catalyst Athletics. If you're looking to get better at one particular thing, you got to learn who's the best Olympic lifters out there, the best coaches. You know, Mike Bergner, great coach. Chris Wilkes is a local guy for me. There's always going to be some kind of clinic that you can get to that's going to get you better at your sport. And if it's basketball or something like that, then that's what you got to do. If you want to learn more about nutrition, maybe you should take a college course or something like that. But at the same time, like I said, so many different people are preaching different things, you know, and I've read books that say you got to eat, you know, 70% carbohydrates. And then if you're looking at paleo diet, its carbohydrates are very low, and no grains. Don't eat any grains at all, no rice. You know, that's going to, you know, cause hyperinsulinism, and you're going to get, you know, inflammation and disease because they're preaching the same things that they're saying. If you do the same things that they're telling you to do in these college, you know, nutritional courses, that's what's going to give you inflammation and heart disease. So who do you know what to believe? You know, it's hard to say as far, you know, when you're talking about nutrition aspects and things like that. But as far as training goes, I mean, you're right. I think you said it earlier. There's so many different sites out there, and people want that instant gratification. There's so much information right in your face. All you got to do is hit, you know, one keyword in the computer, and then you have a plethora of knowledge jumping up at you. How do you know what's reputable, what's garbage? You know, we find out pretty quick, you know, the people who have the lasting power. And there's some big dogs out there that definitely carry the weight. You know, you got to just eliminate the other crap out of the way, I guess.
I'm not sure who said it, but I remember listening to someone who was probably someone from Elite Fitness or maybe Critical Bench, I forget exactly who, but said one of the worst things ever for strength training was the internet, just the advent of the internet and sort of what that's done to the proliferation of information. It's just been unbelievable. So I don't know if a story about the internet, maybe good or bad, but it certainly changed almost everything, it feels like.
Sure, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, and you know, Elite Fitness Training, I mean, that's definitely a site that I follow regularly, and, you know, some of the strongest guys on the planet, you know, coming through this, and you got Louis Simmons and Super Training out in, you know, was it San Francisco? But, yeah, I mean, these guys are absolutely right. It's so easy to access the information, but there's just so much conflicting information as well. Who knows what's right? But it seems like as soon as someone writes something down, they're automatically an expert, and, you know, that's not always the case, unfortunately.
Very true. One of the things that I think is interesting, which is why I really wanted to talk to you, was I know that you've opened up your gym, you've opened up your own place, and sort of having, I would assume, sort of personal feelings about sort of the way you train athletes and do things, as you explained, is there a way that you can sort of bring it all together in terms of maybe people are not getting instruction like they used to? You know, I don't remember being taught how to lift weights, say, in high school. I sort of don't know where people would be looking at now. And maybe they need to come to Strength Shop or somewhere comparable. Does that seem to make sense with your experience and the people you see coming into your gym?
Well, that's as far as, you know, my background goes. You know, coming through high school, I was in a situation where, you know, one of the assistant coaches sat in the corner and read a magazine, and, you know, we had a basic template that we were supposed to follow, but we're never really taught. I was taught by the guys who were a year or two ahead of me, you know, and I remember doing things like, you know, lateral arm raises and front raises and things like that, and I'd get on the leg press and leg extensions. No one really taught me how to squat. I figured it out after a while, but no one really taught me how to do it. And so my learning curve, you know, was pretty long. So I'm trying to eliminate that learning curve and get these kids doing things right before they develop terrible habits, or hopefully, you know, get them starting to do something, because some of them don't do anything out there. Maybe they play their sport, but they don't play a sport at all. So they can come in here and they can learn how to be an athlete. Some kids are just very gifted and they need very little instruction. Some don't. Some aren't as gifted. But that is the idea for me, is because I remember I got very little instruction. And I know some high school programs or college programs are much better than others, but I just look back at where I came from, and it wasn't there. It was good at the time because that's all I knew. I didn't know another way. I thought that's what it was. But I think giving these kids that much of an advantage, are they riding the bench, you know, their junior year? Or are they that close, you know, to getting to the next level, you know, from going from riding the bench to making first team? Are you, you know, looking at going D3, or are you going to be D2 or D1 going into college? You know, are you going to make, you know, states or all region? I want to take the guys to the next level. I'm not always going to get the best athletes in here, but what I want is to get the guys that have the heart and desire to want to get better. And they don't have to know anything. And I'm more than happy to take guys that come in here and don't have any bad habits, because the habits are some really hard things to break sometimes. You got to break them all the way back down to the very, you know, very beginning, and they don't want to do that. They think, oh, I already got a 350 squat. You got a 350 quarter squat with your, you know, your hips in bad alignment, and, you know, they're like ducks or dog squatting, you know, tucking their hips under or things like that, and everything just looks horrible watching it. It puts me in agony. So it's not getting stronger just for the sake of getting stronger. You know, I want these kids to have, you know, a lifetime of knowledge. You know, you know, 20 years, 30 years down the line, hopefully they're going to still be doing things in the gym or teaching somebody else, and I'll be the guy that, you know, taught them how to do things the right way, and they can still be healthy, safe, and strong years down the road because I taught them the right way, and I'm just hoping that I am teaching them the right way. I mean, this is, I just opened the strength shop about a month ago, but I mean, I've been training for years, and every day, every month, I'm trying to get better and find a more efficient way to teach these kids. And because, you know, at times I found myself actually having a little bit of a template, you know, but that's not accurate at all. And I've kicked myself in the mouth a couple times by trying to do or train different people the same way. And I, you know, everyone learns, you know, and I've made my mistakes and I've learned from them, and I'm sure I'll make more, but I'm doing the best I can to teach these guys the right way, that hopefully they have a lifetime of knowledge that they can, you know, learn from and have that base to keep growing and getting stronger. That's going to benefit them in a way that helps their sport and helps their life.
Now, I know that I'm jealous, the fact that you know, sort of have been able to open up your gym and sort of maybe conceivably be that's the place where you go to work until you don't want to work anymore. If someone else has a goal like that, talk a little bit about what the process was like of actually sort of deciding that was what you wanted to do and then seeing it happen.
Well, I was working at a bodybuilding style gym up the road from my present location, and the people were great. Everybody was nice, but I just knew it wasn't for me, because every time I brought in a client, I always felt like I was being obtrusive and intruding on someone else's territory, like their workouts were being invaded by the obtrusive things that I was doing, having them do like hard jumps and there would be a little bit more noise and a little more sweat. And the trainer next to me, who's training a little bit older woman, you know, I'm not going to have her doing box jumps or anything like that, but she's training the way she's got to train this person. And she'd actually be sitting, I remember, like certain instances like this, where they'd be sitting in the leg extension machine drinking coffee and would never even break their conversation. You know, you do a couple reps and you talk. And we've all seen that. We've all done it. But that just destroyed any kind of credibility that I had, like as far as like trying to train athletes and get them bigger, stronger, like just the environment. And I'm saying it destroyed my credibility, but the environment was just detrimental to what I was trying to achieve. And trying to bring in more than one, it just amplified it that much worse. And we spoke earlier about, you know, the small groups and group training. And that's what I was trying to get towards, not the one-on-one. And when there's nothing but machines lined up next to each other, you don't have the space to train athletically in an open environment, because it's not always about how you can move a machine. It's about how you can move your body, treat your body as the machine. And I'm not 100% against machines. I think there's a place for them. They can certainly get you strong, but because they work in such a linear fashion, one-dimensional pushing or pulling motion, I think their uses are limited. So I choose to have, several different implements. One of the first things I like getting people on the sandbags, stuff like that. So they learn a lot of different things, and that is the reason why I knew I needed to get my own place. So I don't have any frills here. It's about 924 square feet, got high ceilings, about 20-foot ceilings. I just drove around town. I looked for storage facilities and offices for rent, and tried to find some of the cheapest ones possible that weren't too far away as far as location. And I found one that's relatively centrally located in Virginia Beach. And there's not even a bathroom in my facility, but there's one on the end of the building. So you got to do essentially a 50-meter sprint if you got to, do your business. But hey, that's the way it is. And I don't have air conditioning. The doors come up, the bay door that comes open. I got a couple big wind tunnel type fans, flow them on, and the kids just love the environment. They bring in their music, I throw it in, they go nuts, and they just love the environment. They talk about it, they go out and they tell their friends about it. And in the past couple of weeks, I've about doubled my business just because everyone's bringing in another friend. You got to see this. You got to do this, because they're so used to these rules and regulations that they have to follow in the facilities that they train in currently, whether it's high school or the local recreation center, where you can't drop a weight, you can't make any noise. If somebody sees sweat, they are appalled, and you're essentially being asked to leave. And things like Planet Fitness. Are you killing me? Planet Fitness, the lunk alarm. You guys heard this? If you make a peep, if you make any kind of noise at all, you're getting kicked out. Are you kidding me? How are you supposed to get any better at what you're doing if you don't? I'm not saying you got to scream. I don't have guys screaming on rep number one, and then they're doing a 12-rep set, and every single rep they're screaming louder and louder. That's not intensity to me. That's kind of being a jackass. But learn how to control yourself and, do what you got to do. But getting back to the point, opening your warehouse gym, find a location. Find something that fits in your budget, and my budget was next to nothing, but I knew if I didn't make a move, I'm always going to be stuck in a place that I did not enjoy what I was doing. I couldn't get the groups in. There wasn't the space for it, because there was just too much machinery, too much equipment, so I wanted to back off away from the equipment. I told the owner, some of these machines in there, I said, they got to go. They're worthless. She said, what do you think I should do with them? I said, melt them down and make manhole covers out of them, and they'll be a lot more useful to society. If you turn them into manhole covers as opposed to, taking a space over in the corner, what they're doing right now, because it's just a complete waste of time. And the way I see it, you're spending $2,000-$3,000 on some of these, I hate to call out any names, but, these large, exercise equipment, machinery, say $3,000, they do one exercise. $3,000 for one exercise, you can grab a kettlebell, for less than $100 or somewhere around $100, $200, and you have dozens of exercises. So, talk about it, training economy. I mean, that's what it's all about. So you've got to be smart and practical about your exercise selection or your equipment selection. Sandbags are a killer. They cost next to nothing. I mean, I had a video on how to make a Bulgarian bag, and that's something that's by far and away my most popular video, something that costs next to nothing to do, and that's what people like. They want to find out, how can I maximize my training or enhance it just a little bit with changing things up? Doesn't cost much money, just a little bit of creativity, and I'm getting work. And some people just don't know this. They don't know that certain things exist. They come in here like, what's this? And then I'm showing them how to do things with sandbags, and they're doing a bunch of different exercises with get-ups and broad jumps and, just shouldering and lunges. And they thought they couldn't do these things unless they had a particular machine that they're all waiting for in their local health club facility. So you don't have to wait for that machine. Your body goes just like this. Here, now hold this dumbbell, hold this kettlebell or this medicine ball or this sandbag, and you do it. And I got 5-10 people doing, a workout where they'd all be trying to rotate on the same machine, whether sitting down, relaxing their core, getting a fraction of the results in more time. So, here they're getting more results in less time, and they're in a really fun environment, and it's something that they can go away with, energized, and telling their friends about. the rent here for me is pretty cheap. Like I said, 924 square feet. I don't know what you're going to find in your area, but it costs me $460 a month. You know, so some people are going to pay, you know, a lot more than that for that kind of space. It just depends on what kind of sacrifice you're willing to make. There's no frills here. There's nothing but sheet metal walls, brick on one side, no heating, you know, things like that. I always want to make those kind of sacrifices. The weather doesn't get too bad in Virginia. It gets hot in the summer, and they're dealing with the heat, but it doesn't get too cold in the winter, so I'm going to see how that works out. You know, I get a couple space heaters. You know, I'll do it. But the camaraderie and the energy that gets in here when these guys are working out, I feel like they're going to follow me and, you know, do whatever I do, no matter where I go. You know, I tell them what to do, and they do it, and I make sure they're doing the right thing. And just the hard work and the intensity and the attitude and the culture that's being grown in here, it's you know, things that I've been, you know, yearning for, like, as opposed to just being like this dull, droid-like mentality, like walking around in your local gym or facility. That's not it. That's not what it was about to me. So I knew to express my personality, express my training ideologies, I had to get my own place. There was just no other way. I just couldn't do it any other way besides getting into a place where I didn't have the rules and regulations. And, I could have started out making more money, working for somebody else, doing their hours and having them feed me clients that I didn't want to train anyway. But now I get to accept the people who I want. I get to accept them. I get to turn them down. Not that I want to turn anybody down, but if you got a bad attitude and you don't really have the desire to, you know, to want to learn, or maybe your goal is something like, I want to lose 5 pounds, but I don't really want to work for it, I'm going to be nice and polite, and I'm going to tell you that this probably isn't the right place for you, you know. But if I was at a different facility, you better believe there, you know, I'm going to get fired if I say, you know what, this isn't for you. Take your business somewhere else. So, you know, I just knew that this was the right thing, and I had to do it. So I took the step, made the plunge, put up a little bit extra money to start, and hopefully it comes back to me many times over. You know, it's even if it's not about the money. I mean, you don't get into coaching to make, you know, millions of dollars. You get into coaching because that's what you are. You're a coach, and you want to help people. So this provides me with the opportunity to do so.
That last little bit reminds me of something that Elliot Pulse is very fond of saying most of the time, is that it's not for everyone, you know. But I think more people than are willing to even recognize it, you know, do want something like that. They want an environment like that. So it's good. It's good to have you on and give you a chance to sort of tell your side of the story and let people know, you know, that you're out there and things like that. Running out of time, but tell people where to find you if they're in Virginia Beach, or, you know, maybe they're on the internet. Tell them how to get a hold of you.
Well, my website, I was having some problems with it on GoDaddy, but it's the Strength Shop. VB as in VirginiaBeach.com, www.thestrengthshopvb.com, and GoDaddy should get all those issues worked out anytime now. But on YouTube, my videos are located on MWICH40, MWICH40. That's my YouTube page. I guess I should switch that to the Strength Shop, but I've been doing that for a lot longer than I've had the Strength Shop open. Email me at thestrengthshop@me.com. And if you're anywhere in the Virginia Beach area, please stop on down, get yourself a little trial membership, see if you like what we do, get yourself stronger, more flexible, and enjoy life a little bit more with your better attitude and increased health and fitness.
Well, Matt, I appreciate the time on a Monday taking a few minutes to talk with us, but it's good to hear from you. Thank you again.
Thanks so much, Luke. Talk to you later.